Well, I want to say good morning to my friend, my longtime brother, Steve Fivecoat, and of course, Dennis Deardorff. And Steve's been a longtime friend. How are you doing today, Steve?
We're doing pretty good today.
Yeah.
We're good.
We go back, boy, I don't even know the years. It's got to be in the 70s when we first met.
We came to the Trinity Church in the fall of 1969.
69.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. 69 was an interesting year. I graduated from college.
Yeah.
Our first daughter was born. Man, guy, that's going back.
Yeah.
She's 50 something now. Well, you can do the math quicker than I can.
Yeah. Yeah.
You came to church there, and then wasn't long you shared ministry with us. Had great times. I remember I remember some of the stuff we got into with the guys and rafting and all that.
Man. Oh yeah. Well, I was wondering, did you play softball?
Oh, I forgot all about that. Yes.
Yeah, it was a big deal at Trinity to have a softball team.
Back in the days when I could run and be flexible. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think my career ended on that infamous slide into third base, and I tore up
that's right.
I tore up my ankle and tore the ligaments so bad. I had a cast for 6 weeks.
Yeah, I did that.
Right in the middle of summertime. And that summer we went to Tulsa with a bunch of kids. I don't know if you went with us.
I didn't go to that one.
No, we, oh man, that was so hot, itchy. Anyway, good times. Well, then you took on a career with, which you, I remember you always really wanted to. You wanted to get into EMT work, and you took on a position with Tualatin Valley.
Yeah.
Fire and Rescue.
Yeah, back when it was Washington County, there were multiple fire departments out there. Now there's just basically one. They've merged them all together.
But, I'd forgotten. Yeah. Started with the county.
Yeah. Started with the county, working at the training center in King City. That was in 1973,
mm-hmm.
when I was there doing their college program out of the King City station. And then I got hired by the fire district in September of 74, when I actually started working for Washington County 1.
Wow. So then it just progressed from there, didn't it? You guys, you and Brenda and the kids moved out to Washington County to be closer to job. You just moved up the ranks, as I recall.
Yeah. Well, we lived in East County for a long time. We didn't move out to Washington County until, out to Tualatin until Corey graduated high school. I didn't remember what year that was. Somewhere in the 90s before we came. No, it was okay. Before the 90s.
Okay.
But anyway, we moved out there mostly to, Corey went off to college and Casey wanted to play baseball at a different school. So we moved out to Tualatin, and it had a really good baseball program. So that's why we came out here for that. And of course, it moved me closer to work. And yeah, I just worked my way up the ranks. I was 17 years on a rescue, and then voted up to a lieutenant, and then eventually to captain.
How long were you captain?
I was a captain 2 years.
2 years, okay. And then and then retired from there?
Retired from there.
Yeah.
Actually, what was interesting about becoming a captain was that the captain spot that was open, that the station they needed was in Tualatin, but it was on the hazmat team. And so I had to go through all the hazmat training, brand new skill field I'd never done before. And I had to do a 3-week course or something for hazmat to get certified, so that I could be a captain in a hazmat station. So that was totally different.
Interesting. Were you at one station pretty much the whole time, or did you move around?
I moved to where I was. I spent a lot of years in the West Slope area, mm-hmm. off of Canyon Road. There mostly, most of the north end of Washington County. And I didn't come down to work down south until the very end of my career. So Beaverton, West Slope, Somerset, all those places, you know, people don't know them by those names anymore. So
it's all changed. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all changed. It's all incorporated and different. And when I started out at Somerset, which is 185th and Highway 26, the fire station that was out there was pretty much all that was out there. It was all farmland, lots of barns, lots of agriculture, and none of the stuff that you see out there today was there when I started.
It's exploded out there. Yeah, all of that. You've been
very rural.
Yeah. So, you know, how many years altogether were you with then, with the TV?
Altogether, I was in the fire service for 28 years.
28. Yeah. How would you describe that period of your life? That's like a lot of us, that consumes a better portion of our lives, our careers. And how would you describe it? Was it really a fun time, exciting time, learning time? What words come to your mind as you think of that?
Well, it was really an exciting time. I mean, it was a job that I looked forward to. I mean, there was not a day that I can remember in those 28 years that I didn't look forward to or wasn't anxious to get to work, because it was the kind of job that was exciting. I worked some stations that weren't real busy, and I worked stations that were extremely busy. But still, it was every day there was, you come to work and you never knew for sure what you were going to see that day or face that day, what challenges. It was very exciting. I enjoyed it immensely. Miss it every day. Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like your heart passion was being fulfilled? It sounds like you say exciting.
I did. I mean, I didn't really necessarily start out thinking about working with the fire department. I had, you know, had some thoughts about it in the past, but going into the military and being a medic in the military was what kind of turned the corner for me.
Oh yeah.
And came out of the military in the years when it was a brand new emergency kind of a scenario, was brand new to the culture, where you had paramedics out there that were doing things that had never been done before outside of an emergency room.
Yeah.
So there was always new things to learn and new skills to do. And so it was exciting times. It always was. And it wasn't really actually until probably within the last year or so that I think I became pretty much burned out on emergency medicine stuff. Yeah. I've been doing it for so many years, and it was just like, I'm not sure I want to. That was one of the motivations to retire, was when they offered me the chance to retire, it was like, okay, I've done it. I've done it all that I wanted to do. I've accomplished everything I wanted to do. I'm okay with retiring.
Now, you were in the vernacular, a preacher's kid.
Yeah.
Your dad was in the ministry. So you had an early acquaintance with Christ. Did you see working in the fire department as we would say, a calling, a ministry opportunity? How would you see that?
I would say it was a ministry opportunity to the public, mm-hmm. in the services that we provided. I mean, it was the kind of job where every day you got to help somebody. And looking back on it now, it was, for me, with those people, it was a chance to, was that connection that I always enjoyed the most, was the people connection.
Yeah.
And being there to help them and comfort them, often reassure them. So it was more in that role of how I interacted with the civilian populace, as mm-hmm. opposed to necessarily seeing it as a ministry to the other firefighters.
Okay.
That did happen. I mean, I had contact with people, and people would sometimes seek me out for advice and stuff, but not like being a firefighter, I wasn't a missionary to firefighters.
Yeah. Okay. So it was your encounter with the general public in a real crisis or trauma need that you felt that was really what you were called to do. And I remember you telling me, and I saw, I have a copy up somewhere, you wrote a compilation of those experiences in a little book. And tell me again, I forget the exact title of it.
The title is Rescue Me.
Rescue Me, yeah.
Yeah. There are other books out there with that same title, so you have to look for my name on it to get it. You can get it on Amazon if anyone's interested.
Yeah, good. Yeah,
it's just a short book. It won't even take you an hour to read it. It's just a compilation of my career and of some of the more difficult calls we were on, how I dealt with them, and from a Christian perspective.
Yeah. No, I read it. It's a great read. I think it provides an insight into that world of first responders, like you were, and where you saw God in the midst of tragedy and crisis and death and all of that. Yeah. Now, did that have a personal impact on you? Where you were seeing, you were obviously in the midst of what you saw God doing in performing sometimes miracles, sometimes your hands and whatever. How do you feel yourself being used or being an instrument, maybe?
Well, it's looking back on it, obviously I've changed in my thinking and maybe even my philosophy about God's role in my life and where he was. And as I look back on it, there were times when I felt like it was an interesting phenomenon to doing that particular job, in that there were in the height of the crisis, the height of the death and life and death scenarios, it was at times a very lonely experience, because when it came down to frequently, it was all the decisions were on my shoulders on a particular case. If I was there and I was the senior medic, all the decisions were on my shoulders to make. And everybody looked to me to say, tell me what to do next. And it was like, it was a lonely experience at that point. And so looking at that, I wish I had felt more like God was actually me rather than someone I had to call on and wait on to show up, feeling alone sometimes, like, God, where are you? Why are you not here helping me with this? Mm-hmm. When in reality, he was. And I can look back on him, on those calls and those cases now, and say, well, he was there, but at times it didn't feel like it was very
interesting. You're saying that. What now is this is something that's dawned on you of recent? Let me get a little backstory here for our listeners. I don't know what year it was. We reconnected after a long period of not being together, and I remember some of the first things that you and I talked about were things that were starting to even be new to me. And I was sharing a lot of the stuff. We started meeting personally and whatnot. I remember you helped us. You jumped right in and helped us with some events that we were doing for men. I think it was the 2015 ISA conference. I think you helped us work in, or something of that nature. But anyway, we were sharing in those years early on as this sense of who we are and who is God. Do you feel like maybe some of our conversations were bringing a new revelation in your mind of who you are?
Oh, yeah.
Who's God?
Yeah, it's changed dramatically for me over the last 4 or 5 years since we did our first study. I don't know what the name of the guys was, but you got me do a booklet that I did and study. And it was like with you, the desire was there for something more. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of the process. And so over the last 4 or 5 years, there's been this change in me and how I view so many things, particularly about my beliefs, that have changed dramatically, in particular about where is God? What is he doing in my life? and the difference between the separation of man and God, and then realizing that that separation is by choice, because it's not what God has desired, and that God is dwelling in anyone that wants, that asks him to dwell there. He is there with them. All you have to do is make that decision that, yeah, belief that, yeah, he is here with me now. So when I look back on some of those difficult experiences where I wondered where God was, if I were to be in the same mindset then as I am now, it would have been a whole lot easier to deal with, I think. Because so much of my thinking about even the things I do now, which are not life and death situations.
Mm-hmm.
But having that belief and that comfort that God is dwelling with me, is in me, is even me, changes perspective on how you approach all the things that approach life in general.
Yeah. Now, as we said, you wrote those stories and you were sensing being alone, having to make the decisions. And then as you look back on it, God, let me say it this way. You were feeling alone in the sense, where are you, God? And hoping God would show up. But now you look back on that and you say he was there all along.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wish I had the, I don't know, belief or whatever, that was true.
Mm-hmm.
That was the way I was raised, was God and man. And sin was always a separation between us. And if there was any conflict or sin in your life, then God wasn't going to be there with you. And so you were on your own until you got forgiveness for your sins. And then God would come back and be in your life until the next time you sinned, and then you'd be without him again. And that's the way it was for mm-hmm. so many years until the last few years.
Now, you, and as we said, you were raised in a very strong Christian environment, being a preacher's kid. So,
yeah.
And in a denomination that was very much about trying to tell others about God and trying to bring about the reality of God in the universe. But at the same time, what you're saying is you weren't feeling like he was with you or in you. You could find him.
Yeah.
Think back on that. You used the word separation. Did you feel separated from him?
Oh yeah. I honestly believe that. I mean, everything that I was raised and taught was that God could only abide in a holy place. So if you as a person were not holy or mm-hmm. imperfect, then God really didn't want to have anything to do with you because of that. The other side of that is, though, I always believe that through confession of sins, forgiveness of sins, God would always forgive me and everything would be okay again for a period of time or whatever. So yeah, it was, I would say my beliefs back then were very much guilt-based, mm-hmm. shame-based, whatever.
Yeah.
And so,
that's
the way I lived it.
We share a common background. This is why I'm kind of bringing the question to focus. We were raised in similar theological denominational backgrounds. And as I remember, it was pretty much about managing sin. Because as you just mentioned, that seemed to have been the biggest thing that divided us from God. And however we can control or see our sin, either being forgiven or still pretty much alive in us, that's how we concluded where God was. Where, as you said, we were taught God and sin could not coexist.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So as I look back on it, what an unfortunate reality, as we see now, an unreality.
So, yeah.
Yeah. God pretty well took care of the sin question, but we didn't know that. We didn't realize it in its fullest extent.
Well, the other side of it is, with this sin issue, is sinful people. And mm-hmm. I was raised that you don't do things, and for the most part, don't associate with sinful people.
Right.
And so I always viewed that people that I worked with were good people, wonderful people, but they didn't go to church. They smoke and they drink and they did all these other things. And so it was the scenario, well, you know, they're not good people, so I can't associate with them. I can't do things with them. I need to get them to come to church, because when they come to church, then they'll be saved. But I, outside of the church, I really can't associate with you and whatever. And it's, in my mind, the biggest failing of my career was that I had the attitude that, well, I can't associate with you guys because you're sinful and you don't go to church. Lost all that ministry.
Well, yes. It is unfortunate as we see how much of a perspective held us back and sort of marginalized our life from having some beautiful relationships. Wow. And that people, God loves them just as he loves us. He's in them as he's in us. Wow. And a perception. So now tell me, Steve, when that began to change for you, as we talked about, you and I had these conversations and you began to do some reading. Is there any one particular piece of literature that you came across? You mentioned that one study we did. But
yeah, that study we did was the beginning. That made me begin to think there was something else. But probably Norman Grubb's books mm-hmm. have been the biggest.
Okay.
The biggest change for me. Of reading his material and then reading his material and his what his thoughts were, and now go back and read the New Testament, mm-hmm. read John, read mm-hmm. Romans, some of those. And now those passages hold a totally different meaning for me than they did before.
Okay.
It's been liberating, mm-hmm. to say the least, in the thought process. I mean, I'm sure I've not grasped it all yet. But there's been enough change. Yeah, there's been a lot of change. And I think I finally reached the point, probably in the last year or so, where it was, I'm just confused back and forth between this new way of thinking and the way I was raised. And I finally reached a point where I just said, okay, I'm done with the battle. I believe this. I believe God lives in me. I believe God is in me. I don't understand it. I'm just going to live it. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting because the passage I'm reading today, I read today in Colossians, was Paul saying to the people of Colossians, it's time to just stop and start living the life God has given you to live. Mystery doesn't go away, but just start living what you know to live.
Right. That's so good. So good. You mentioned Norman Grubb. Not a lot of people know who that is. He's rather obscure in so far as most of Western Christianity is concerned. He's not contemporary. He died somewhere in the late 80s, I believe. But he had a profound impact wherever he did go, and wrote several books, and his impact is living on. And as you just testified, and I can testify, when I first discovered him, I read everything I could get my hands on and then listened to him. And of course, listening to him, he was British, very, very British. And I don't know if you've ever tried to listen to any of his old tapes.
No.
Yeah, very hard, because he spoke very fast, and his dialect was very, very, well, it wasn't Scottish so much, but a very British brogue.
Yeah.
And so it was hard to listen to him. It was better to read him. But yeah. The book that you, what's the principal book that you read? Was it Yes, I Am?
No, the other one, God something. I can't remember who God is or something.
Okay, God Unlimited?
Yes, God Unlimited.
Okay. it didn't matter which book you read, his theology and, as you read, it really more philosophy. He wasn't an expositor as we would typically think of teachers and preachers that we become fond of in Christianity. He was more of a, he came at it from more of a philosophical position. And when you read him, you, as you experienced, you had to read him again and again.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and once you got a hold of what he was saying, oh my goodness, it's your eyes, the insights, the understanding just, it turns around. I remember the first time reading him in Yes, I Am, and his, there's a sequel to it. Well, some other shorter papers, No Independent Self, and this, what is it called? The Secret Key to Something. I'm missing some of the titles, but they're all there. If you do a Google search, you'll find all of his books, or go on Amazon. A lot of his books are on Amazon. Hmm. But after beginning to read him, you sensed there's a new perspective then that was opening mm-hmm. up in your mind. Mm-hmm. And you say yeah. it changed how you looked at scripture.
Oh yeah, dramatically. Changed my philosophy about a lot of things, about the purpose, benefit, or whatever of the organized church, what our role is to be there. And yeah, it did it. Dramatically changed me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I think I was open. I was searching for something, and I guess what it just made sense what he had to say, even though it was, he had to reread even a sentence several times
mm-hmm.
to get it. It made more sense to me and our relationship with God than what I had been taught in the past.
Yeah. Okay. So it was something now that was clicking, maybe. I can only share from my own experience that something.
Yeah, no, it just made some things now made sense
mm-hmm.
that didn't make sense in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Mm-hmm. So one of Grubb's, if you were to really boil over all of his teaching and he's writing down to say one theme, would you say that theme is our union with God or with Christ? Does that describe how you saw his?
Yeah.
His writing?
Yeah, it was the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship that Grubb had with God was so totally different
mm-hmm.
in the sense of not anti-spiritual, but was. There was, it was just a different relationship. It was the kind of relationship you would want to have
mm-hmm.
as
mm-hmm.
opposed to God on a throne in heaven far away, as opposed to God living in me and that being the relationship all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that was the difference. He had, Grubb writes about it. He had such a different relationship with God mm-hmm. than I had
mm-hmm.
seen in other people before.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the way his relationship was.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was more sensible to me. And when I look at the world in general and people, their actions and attitudes towards the Christianity, and it being such a setback for so many people, they're misinterpreting so many things because church has made it that way, the philosophy made it that way, then mm-hmm. Grubb comes along and it's totally different. That's the kind of philosophy I would want to teach someone or share with someone, is that kind of relationship with God, not the way I've been raised.
Yeah, so go back here a little bit. Let's go back and you said earlier you felt, even in your earlier career, you were looking for God to show up and you felt separate from him. And of course, we thought that was because of our sinful lifestyle or whatever. But yep. Now with this perspective, I think you mentioned you wish you could have realized God was there all along?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I begin to look at, even though like I'm not dealing with life and death situations every day, mm-hmm. my relationships with people that are non-Christians, non-church people, whatever, is different. I mean, my relationships with people in general is totally different because of my relationship with Christ. His spirit mm-hmm. living in me is different. It's not, again, that probably the biggest change effect it had on my life, this relationship with Christ living in you, not separate from you, is in prayer life. Prayer life is totally different mm-hmm. than okay. it ever was before, because of I'm not calling on God and trying to tell him all these things. I'm realizing now he's with me. He knows all these things already. It's not mm-hmm. it's not some revelation to him, the problems I'm coming with him or whatever I'm feeling, the anxieties I'm feeling. He already understands that. He already knows that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a totally different relationship than
okay.
the way I was raised.
So unpack that a bit more. When he already knows that that's going, whatever it is that's going on in your life and that you're trying to address or talk to him about, then how do you approach him with that? If he already knows it, it's already something he's very aware of. He's in you, he's experiencing this with you, then what's the object of prayer then?
Well, and you say that, and Paul talks about it, Christ even talked about prayer, and it is an attitude or a way of living of thanksgiving. That, and Grubb talked about this quite a bit too, all about thanksgiving. So in knowing that Christ already is aware of the situation I'm about to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that he is in the midst of it, and this is not a surprise to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got it worked out. The details are there. The resources are there. It's all there. So then it becomes, rather than a prayer of desperation, it becomes a prayer of thanksgiving. Thank you, God, that you're leading in my life. Thank you that whatever you've got for today, it's in your control and you're going to provide everything that I need. You've got it all worked out. So it all becomes a prayer of thanksgiving, even to the point of when I think about those people that I love that don't believe in God or are struggling in that area. It's still not a, oh, please save them, Lord. It's more of thank you, God, for what you're doing in their lives today, because I know you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think about why wouldn't God want to be involved in life? Why wouldn't God want to work in their lives? So if he is, which I believe he is, then it's more of a thank you rather than a demand.
Yeah. So how would you compare what you're saying now to where you thought of God and his place in our lives before? Is this feeling doubtful, or are you more confident of this now being the truer picture? I'm not trying to lead you here, but
yeah, there's no question that it's more confident all the time in this relationship. I can't say that I am 100% solved the mystery, it's all over with, I'm you know, whatever. I'm not feeling that way, but It's a day by day thing. And the revelations that Christ gives us every day, then that grows. Experience tends to help you grow. But I don't have it all figured out. I still have, there's a mystery. And Paul talks about the mystery. And I don't think the mystery is ever going to be completely revealed until Christ reveals himself to the world. But the confidence level is there more and more. So, and that's different than it was in the past.
So would you say this provides a sense of excitement, anticipation, enthusiasm for what more you're going to see, what more God's going to reveal to you that is happening in your life, in him?
Oh, yeah, I would say so. It's hard, in these times, it's hard to, I tend to see things and want to fix them. Mm-hmm. I know I want God to fix them or use me to fix them. But it's hard at times to see God at work and to realize, yeah, okay, that was, you know, on a grander scale. But yet, bring it down close to the vest, and it's like, okay, yeah, that's God. Well, mm-hmm. that was God working in that way. It may have been a small issue or a big issue. I'm trying to focus there on where do you want me to be? What do you want me to do today, God? And then we'll do it. Affect change where I can affect change, or God changing, and not worry about the stuff I can't affect. I can't change what happens in Washington, D.C., but I can sure change in my response and relationship to the people immediately around.
Wow. You mentioned a term not long ago that I've grown fond of. You describe each day as just show up. Tell us about what that means in your life.
Well, if you want to go back to the very basic of the fact that what I am, who I am, what I was created for is to be a vessel. And I like that. I like the attitude of I'm a vessel. God's going to use me to make a difference to people. I really can get into that. So if you look at it from the sense of I am a vessel, God's got it worked out, then all I have to do is deliver the vessel, mm-hmm. me, wherever he wants me to be, which is just show up and let God take care of it, you know? And it's a totally different philosophy for approaching your day and whatever is in front of you, that God's already working. He was working on it yesterday. And all I have to do is be the vessel and show up, and then God's there.
Yeah. Wow. Rather than trying go ahead.
And then he's going to take care of all of the little pieces, yeah. all the odds and ends. And I think also that being that attitude of all you have to do is show up often, is then it takes all the pressure off. And God's going to do it, and I just need to be there and let God do his thing. That doesn't mean that there aren't times and there's preparation mm-hmm. and some of those things that take place. But yet, in the end, it's just showing up and letting God do what God wants to do, absolutely. Rather than trying to dictate which way you think you go.
Yeah, that's so good. As you said, rather than trying to plan, trying to make things happen, worrying about if you did it right, or all of those things that go into our own efforts.
Yeah.
Just show up and let God do it.
Yeah. And I believe I tend to be the kind of person that plans out ahead, wants to make sure everything's where it's supposed to be. But then again, even that I believe is God working in me, mm-hmm. motivating me to do these things, to be prepared at this level. And so, but it's still all of this inner working of God. And if you choose to have that perspective of letting God do those kind of things.
Right. So you're now retired, and not necessarily saving lives, but how do you see showing up God using you today? How is he using your vessel now?
Well, yeah, he's given to Brenda and I, my wife, a very specific task to do. We're so thankful for it. And working with kids at a local grade school, and he provided a means for us to provide food for kids, which we do every week. We pack up backpacks of food and deliver it with the team. It's not just Brent and I. It's mm-hmm. a team effort of food to about 50 kids a week, and we've been doing this for a number of years now. That's all God's work, and we're so thankful to be involved in it. But that's that, and we do things like lunch buddies, which contact with kids, troubled kids, that are struggling in their life, young kids, second graders particularly we work with. And if any place were to prove this just show up thing and let God work, mm-hmm. it's that contact with people where it's not a skill level. It really just show up, and God's going to, I'm convinced, so convinced in my mind, particularly when you're dealing with children, is they see beyond things that we as adults see. I honestly believe that that children have an innate capability of seeing the good in people, particularly those seeing God in people.
Mm-hmm.
Really believe they have that ability. So if that's the ability, then all you have to do is show up and they're going to see God in you. And don't have to have a skill level, don't have to be perfect. You're just there and God works. I've seen that so many times.
Amazing. So how would you, not that your career was anything wasted, my goodness, you were, what a help to the community, our first responders and firefighters were. How would you see that though then compared to where you are now? Is there a comparison, or do you just feel like this is the next level? Or,
well, I think when it came with the working in emergency medicine and working with people, it's very similar. I mean, mm-hmm. granted, it's not life and death scenarios, but it's that contact with people that's the same now as it was then.
Yeah.
And I can look back at my career now and know that in those times that were difficult times, there's a couple of stories in the book that talk about it. It was God there. It was mm-hmm. those people not seeing me. They were, I believe now, were seeing God in me. That was the connection that was being made. It was that I was some great person, had some great skill. It was, they saw God in me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the contact we made. And I believe that, and it's still true today, I'm working with kids in particular, that they see it. They see it, not me. They're seeing God, because there's no other reason to work as well as others.
Don't you feel kids almost catch this quicker than adults? They don't have any long-standing indoctrination to work through.
Yeah, right. Exactly. They see the very real.
Yeah.
And to them, and I've worked with these kids with the backpack program, and I've worked with people who have volunteered. And that's what I tell the volunteers is, again, it's the same philosophy. All you need to do is show up. And if you don't show up, the kids know it.
Uh-huh.
If you're not there, it hurts them.
Yeah.
Even if you're only meeting with them for an hour once a week, you just showing up. I mean, you can see it in their faces when they realize, oh, it's that day of the week and my lunch buddy is going to be here. They see their lunch buddy, their faces light up, and there's no other explanation for it other than that's just God working.
Amazing, man. It's so exciting.
Yes.
Bless you guys. Now, are you rewriting or are you writing new stories?
Well, if I were to be completely honest with you, I went through the book, the manuscript, and I have rewritten the book.
Oh, yeah.
And I've added a couple of stories to it that I hadn't written before. And I have rewritten the book from my present day perspective. Same stories, same scenarios, but from a little bit different perspective of what I feel now today. I haven't published it. I haven't gotten myself motivated to do that change yet, but I have made the change.
Oh, that's exciting, man. I'll wait for that. That will be so, for anybody who's read the first edition, which was really inspiring and amazing, because it, like I said, to give you an insight into what you guys go through or what you did go through in responding to those life, death, crisis situations. Now with your new perspective, looking back on it, I'll be really interested to see that. I hope you do. I hope you can get it in a place, put it up. I think you were telling me you were trying some platforms like Facebook or...
I've put several of the rewrites up on Facebook already. I need to put the rest of them up.
Tell us, how would people find you on Facebook? It's just Steve Fivecoat?
I actually have a page for the book itself, for the stories. I think they're called Steve's Stories.
Okay, all right.
On Facebook, if you go there, I think there are 7 or 8 stories in there that are the rewrite, the second edition of the stories.
Okay.
That are in there already.
Okay, and that's your page, Steve's Stories.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Yeah, I think listeners can find that just if they're Facebook users. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, awesome, man. I've really appreciated just our, how do we describe it? Our I'm going to say reconnection. There was some time when, you know, our careers and things were directing us different ways, but now working together and communicating together and having the opportunity and blessing of living up, what, less than a mile apart now. And so,
yeah, well, I always say it's a two, three woods and a nine iron, and I'm in your house. So,
and for everybody who wants to know what that means, we live basically in a golf course community. So it's a lot of fun.
It is. Yeah.
And we're waiting for spring to come when we can get out there and swing them again.
Yeah. It's hard to walk around the golf course and not be able to get a club out and start playing.
Don't you want to just, you want to stand at the tee box. You want to get out there.
Yeah.
Cold. But there'll be a day, and it's soon going to be here.
Yeah.
Well, hey, man, I want to thank you for spending some time just reflecting and going back through your life with me this morning. I think it'll.
Yes.
I think people will be blessed in listening, and those that maybe know you, maybe didn't realize this about you. That's what our purpose was, to do this. So good going. I'm looking forward to more days of conversation.
Yes, I am too. I am too.
For as we share, and each of us, God is showing us new levels of the mystery. If it wasn't a mystery, I mean, we'd know it all, but it's still a mystery. It means it's still a lot. Yeah. Oof, unfathomable. We'll never get it all.
Yeah.
But it's exciting. This new revelation
is
exciting. So have a great day. And thank you again, Dan.
Thank you, Dennis.
Hey, we'll see you soon.
All right. Good enough.
All right, man. Take care. All right.